Terrorists hate the fact that whether it's New York, whether it's London, whether it's Paris, whether it's Brussels, whether it's Istanbul, whether it's Madrid, we have diverse communities living together peacefully. We've got a situation where Parliament is returning to normal today. City Hall is returning to normal today. Tourists are returning to London today. Businesses are returning to normal today. Just the thing that the terrorists hate.
Ryan and Trump have tweaked the bill in search of more GOP votes, but that's not enough for the Freedom Caucus. Their leader, Congressman Mark Meadows, saying Wednesday 25 of their members still opposed it, enough to stop it from passing, giving them just hours to salvage what could be Trump's first big legislative victory.
Judge Gorsuch is a mainstream conservative, and I've never really seen anybody do any better in a hearing. He's acquitted himself well. And let me say this, if there's a Democratic filibuster, that means that qualifications no longer matter. It's all about politics. And the only way I believe you could vote against him is for political reasons, not for politics.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, March 24th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day as we get ready for Friday and the weekend. Lots to talk about later in the program. Rick Sini is with us, our airfare guy from Dallas. We'll be talking a little bit about cheap fares, but also about some of the new restrictions on electronic devices on some airlines coming to the United States, whether or not it might work or be helpful, or if there is a way to circumvent that. We'll talk about that a little later in the show. Coming up in just a few seconds, we'll bring in Paul Nolte with us this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, all eyes in global financial markets are fixed on stuttering Republican efforts to pass a replacement for Obamacare. The vote likely to come later today. Failure likely to undermine faith in Donald Trump's promise to deliver, in his words, a phenomenal U.S. tax reform. Asian stock markets were mixed today after a U.S. vote on health care was delayed. Again, the numbers there show pretty weak numbers in terms of how the indices fared at the end of the day. Coming up here, let me refresh my screen here as it just blanked out on me. The Hang Seng was down this morning, up this morning. The Nikkei was leading the way, up almost a full percent, 177 points. The Shanghai higher as well. Europe, all of the arrows are pointing lower this morning, with the DAX leading the way at about 6 points, off about 6 points there this morning. The CAC and FTSE not far behind. Here in this country, Dow futures are looking for a positive open later on Wall Street, up about 40 points right now. NASDAQ, S&P futures are a little bit higher as well. The White House's ability to get legislation through Congress is crucial. A lot of investors have bet a lot on fiscal stimulus, tax cuts, and capital repatriation. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that today. Benchmark U.S. crude oil rose to just under $48 a barrel. The dollar gained against the euro. What's happening with health care? Well, the White House says today it's going to be the make or break day for it. The White House threatening to leave Obamacare in place and move on to other issues if the vote fails. Expected to come at about 2 or 3 o'clock later today. Republican Chris Collins of New York, a top Trump ally in the House, says it is done today or Obamacare stays. At the end of the day yesterday, the budget director, Mick Mulvaney, told lawmakers that negotiations are over and that President Trump was not going to move any further on that. So we'll see what happens today. A showdown of sorts among the Republicans in Washington. Tuesday's first 1% daily fall on Wall Street since October has put world stock markets on course for their worst week since before President Trump was elected last November. Many analysts continue to cast the decline simply as a consolidation after months of gains. Let's find out what Paul Nolte thinks. Paul is a senior asset manager at portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. He's on with us as he is every Friday. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
Good to have you back. So what do you think? Is it just a sort of a correction, or is it something more that we saw this week?
Oh, I think really all it is just a minor decline. We were down a little bit over 1% for the week. And as you mentioned, the worst week since the election, which really isn't saying much because I think really this is only the third week since the election the markets have even been down. So it's good for the market to take a breather. It's very normal. Usually you see a 1% decline or actually increase in the market once every week to every 2 weeks or so. So again, very normal market action here.
Is there some fear or trepidation about what's happening with the vote on health care? Is that a is that real, or is it just something we've manufactured in reporting on it?
I think it is a little bit of both. It's unusual to say within the first 100 days of a presidency that he's effectively finished as president, and we're already looking to the elections in 2020. The fact that he's willing to walk away from it and leave it alone and move on to other parts of his agenda, I think gives certainly those that are looking for tax reform and tax legislation some hope. And then how he's going to deal with the Republican caucus that is blocking this is going to be an interesting thing to see unfold over the next few months here.
The dynamic is kind of interesting because it's you almost have the Democrats sitting on the sidelines watching it all happen. The Republicans have the White House, the Senate, the House. It's so odd that they can't get this done.
And that's been normal for the Republican Party. We've seen it in the past where the Republicans have had a much harder time getting their group together versus the Democrats. So, again, it'll be interesting to see how he's able to build that coalition within the Republican Party and actually use, or if he's able to use, the majority in both House and Senate to do his benefit over the next 4 years.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. A decision to put off a congressional vote on repeal and replace weighed on markets yesterday. Republican leaders postponed the vote on the American Health Care Act because of a lack of support. Investors wonder now whether passage of President Trump's tax cuts might be even more difficult. The Dow Jones lost 4.75 points yesterday, closing at 20,656. The S&P 500 was 2.5 points lower. The NASDAQ composite fell 4. The Senate has voted to kill Obama-era online privacy regulations. It's a first step toward letting Internet providers like Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon sell your personal information in order to expand their online business. American Airlines has been working to improve its on-time performance, but some standby passengers are paying the price. Gate agents increasingly are under pressure to shut the boarding doors exactly 10 minutes before departure time. The head of American's pilots union says standby passengers are kept off of flights, even with empty seats. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, 521. The Fed governors, Fed officials are out again talking about interest rates. But it was something that Janet Yellen said yesterday that was very interesting. A new Fed report says children who grew up in insecure circumstances, often in poverty, seem disproportionately likely to experience financial insecurity as adults. Paul Nolte back with us from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, that's an interesting study. As somebody who deals with folks, do you find that that is maybe accurate or and is it concerning to you?
You know, what's interesting is actually for a lot of my clients, the last 20 years, actually 15 years, have colored their views of the financial markets. We've seen two market declines of 30% to 40%, and a lot of people are very cautious when it comes to the stock market. During the 90s, a lot of people saw it as a way to wealth, as the markets were up 10-15% per year compounded during the 90s. That has gone away, and investors have become very fearful of the markets at this point, always concerned about a 20% plus decline in the market, and have tended to be a lot more cautious in their investments and investment views.
It's one of those things that really shouldn't be fear-based, should it?
No, it shouldn't. It should be really looking at the markets. You want to take a look at it from a valuation perspective. You want to, as you would with anything else, when you're going into the store to buy something, you're going to shop around and look for the best deal. The same is true when you're looking at the financial markets. You want to shy away when it's expensive, and you want to be a little bit more accepting and buying when it's cheap. The tough part is when it's always easier to buy when everybody's excited. That's usually when it's most expensive. And when it's the cheapest is when things look the worst.
Well, this week we saw Sears with its filing say it may not be able to continue on operating. We might actually see another iconic brand, another iconic store go by the wayside. Is this a possibility? And how did we get to this point, Paul?
know, it's interesting. It's been something that has been developing really for the last 10 years, and it, I think, has less to do with Sears than it does with the CEO, Eddie Lampert. When he took over Sears, and this goes back about 10, 12 years ago now, he has been slowly and methodically dismembering the corporation, selling off different assets and so on. And somebody made the comment that it's kind of like the Jenga game. They keep pulling things out and hoping that the company stays afloat. From his perspective, he's got a lot of loans to the company, but they're all backed up by real estate. So he stands to do okay. I don't see him as a very good retail operator, so I don't think it's necessarily endemic of the retail world, but more specific to Sears and Eddie Lampert as a CEO.
Is there anything we can read into the fact that he's still there? Is this maybe like the direction the company actually wants to go? They want to end operations? Because you'd think that if they wanted to go the other way, they'd replace him.
Well, the thing is, he's a 50% owner of the stock. And there are two shareholders, Eddie Lampert and one other, that own close to 80% of the company. So you know, they effectively hold the keys to the kingdom, and they are looking at that type of a direction. There was some talk way back when that they would spin out a lot of their real estate holdings, and we've heard it from different companies like McDonald's, et cetera, who have a large amount of real estate in the U.S. and around the world to make the to unlock shareholder value, and that's never quite come to pass with Sears.
You've been doing a little bit of pie charting this week on the budget report that the White House put out, and we talk a little bit here about discretionary budget items versus line item cuts here. What have you seen in the budget that brought you to that point?
You know, it's just when it's the reality of the U.S. budget. Three-quarters or more of the U.S. budget is in items that really are very difficult to cut. Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, a lot of those programs that have been in place for years, and really from a legal perspective are very difficult to cut. Certainly from a political perspective, very difficult to cut. Among the discretionary items, defense by far and away is the largest. And you could zero out defense and still run a very large budget deficit. And again, it's just the mathematics of money coming in versus money going out. And as we've talked about in the past, as interest rates go up, that costs the U.S. more in interest as they go out and borrow to keep things afloat, as it were. So, again, those costs go up as well. And it's not something that they can legislate away. They have to pay those interest payments.
Yeah. So what is the answer there? Is it just will it take hard governing to tell folks, hey, we don't have the money, we have to cut these things?
You know, it's going to be, as with anything, it's going to be a combination. I'm not so sure you're going to be able to, given the demographics, given the political environment, it's going to be very difficult to get to a balanced budget. So I think we're going to have to live with a little bit less. How they get to that is going to be, again, very difficult. Obviously, what can solve a lot of that is higher tax revenue. The expectation is that will come from greater economic activity and higher taxes on those revenues, and that's really what Trump is banking on over the next 4 years.
You know, because as more people perhaps go back to work, there's more income tax coming in, maybe a, you know, income tax or tax hike on the rich, which might be coming, or just reformulating of the tax code in general. Those are all things that could bring in revenue.
Absolutely. Again, the big question, though, is will it be enough? And, you know, that's always a difficult thing to project going forward, very easy looking backwards. But again, there are so many things in the budget right now that are very difficult to impossible to reduce or eliminate.
All right, Paul, another basketball weekend for you?
Oh, absolutely. We're getting down to the Final Four by Sunday, so it'll be a fun weekend. Unfortunately, my bracket's shot, so I will be a disinterested observer this weekend.
All right, Paul, we'll have a great weekend. We'll see you again next Friday.
Take care. Thank you.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:39, our Friday edition of the show. If you've been following the saga of American Airlines flight attendants who've had problems with their uniforms, there's some news in this story today, an update. The carrier says that it will allow the people who've had problems, the itchiness problems, to try other off-the-shelf uniforms made by the company that supplies them. They're not identical to the current outfits, but they are made a different way. You'll recall that many of the flight attendants and others who've had to wear those polyester alternatives have been reporting rashes, hives, and headaches, among other things. It's something that you don't want your flight attendants to be preoccupied with when you get on the plane. Also, this week we learned that there are new electronics rules announced for airlines, U.S.-bound airlines from the Mideast to Africa. It's a rule that allows or forces the people on those flights to check electronics and not carry them on board. A similar rule, emergency rule, announced by the U.K., possibly in response to a terror threat. Rick Cini of faircompare.com is the founder and CEO of the company. He joins us this morning from Dallas. Rick, what do you make of these new rules?
Well, I think, you know, the news came out early in the morning in the midweek, and it almost instantly reminded me about two or three different things: the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber, instance where there was potentially some bomb materials in a printer that was in the cargo hold. It's like every now and then, and it's been sort of spanning of years, there's these incidents that occur, and it completely changed the set of rules and security rules. We still take our shoes off today unless you have pre-check or global entry. And again, I doubt this is, if this is something that's extremely actionable intelligence, I think this is probably just a start.
Well, people have been talking about this incident recently with this Somali aircraft that actually had a bomb and some sort of electronic device blew a hole in the cargo hold. So these things can actually do damage to an aircraft, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, pressurized cabins are one of these things you don't want to be poking any sort of hole into at all. It doesn't even matter how big it is. So essentially, you know, this is one of these things where I'm hoping this is something that they're just doing out of an abundance of caution, and it's not something that's going to completely change. I mean, we're talking about routes that flights between 10 and 15 hours. If you can't have your laptop with you or your tablet or a variety of other those devices, a lot of business travelers won't take that trip. That's going to reduce, you know, business travel and a lot of passengers for leisure, you know, that don't happen to have seat back TVs on some of these aircraft where they only have, you can take your tablet and whatnot. Essentially, that's going to, you know, reduce the amount of people that were interested in taking these kind of flights.
Yeah, and some of the airlines, they serve, you know, the United Arab Emirates and Qatar, all of these business places where people go on a regular basis. And people have asked us this morning, why are we saying this is a ban? Because I don't think most people will travel on those flights if they can't actually bring those devices, will they?
It's going to depress demand. There's no doubt about that. I mean, generally, that's going to be the case. So, people used to fly before cell phones and iPads, but it's not as many as they do today.
Right. So let's talk about actual demand. We saw a new report out this week from Airlines for America on how many people are traveling. It's another record, isn't it?
Yeah, spring is a record, 145 million new folks traveling. It's about 4% up year over year. That's generally good news. That means capacity is up slightly. That's good news. That means prices aren't actually up too high. Consumers are actually buying those tickets. Some of this demand is coming from at least from outbound U.S. to Europe, where ticket prices have dropped pretty dramatically. We added Cuba in. While it's sort of slowed down recently, that still added some more in the spring as well. So, you know, all things being considered, that's pretty good news for consumers with ticket prices not up very much.
And airlines are sort of scrambling to add seats. Saw one report, 110,000 seats per day being added to meet the demand. So there are seats.
Oh, yeah, no, there's seats to be had, and this is good news. I mean, the airlines have taken a little bit of hit because their ticket prices aren't as high as they would like them to be. That's good news for consumers generally.
Now, does it mean that there are deals out there? I know that we've talked time to time about how we can find cheap fares, especially here out of Chicago. Is this because fares are so low?
I think a lot of it has to do. I mean, generally, and it's pretty amazing that if you see the price of a particular route change by a dollar, the number of tickets sold or goes down and up dramatically depending on how much ticket prices are. And, you know, Chicago with the two airports competing with each other, especially for domestic travel, is one of the cheapest places to fly out of. I mean, you know, even I was looking for sort of May travel out of Chicago, out of both airports, but you have airlines like Frontier and Spirit on a lot of routes that are they're competing with each other on places like Chicago to Los Angeles on you know, essentially what's a 4.5 hour nonstop is right at $115 round trip on those airlines. And you're seeing, you know, other airlines like United match usually about 20 to 30% higher, which is a really crazy low price. And you've got things out into the Northeast under $100 round trip. A lot of them on the legacy airlines under $160 round trip. South Florida also in that under $200 range. So, I mean, generally this is good news, especially coming into the spring with tons of ticket prices under that $200 mark.
Yeah, this sort of matches to what the Transportation Department was talking about. Historically, Rick, how have we been doing over, let's say, since 2008? Has this been a steady uptick, or has it been moderate, or how would you describe it?
Yeah, well, in 2008, we had the fuel crisis, which occurred in the summertime where oil prices went up to $140 a barrel. We had the recession right after. So really, you have to look at the time frame after 2009 and the beginning part of 2010 when we had a terrible recession. But essentially, it's been sort of a nice, consistent growth from 2011 all the way up to 2017. No huge year that was just better than the other, just continuing to grow pretty slowly. In many years of those years, airlines actually just halted capacity altogether. You have three airlines right now, four of them now, that control a little over 80% of traffic. You would think that would drive up prices, but I still think consumers' wallets are preventing them from paying too much for tickets. And, you know, if you look at sort of what drives price, supply, demand, competition, and fuel prices, right now the thing that's keeping prices where they are consumers' wallets. They still don't have as much discretionary funds as they would like to have, of course, but it's good enough to keep these airlines breaking records every year, year after year.
On an international scale, how much is the strong dollar playing into all of this?
I think a lot of it has to do. So you have the strong dollar in Europe, but you also have terrorism jitters as well. So you have some people saying, hey, I'll take that trip, that once-in-a-lifetime trip, a bit later potentially. But you see prices down 15 to 25%. When you get to some of these destinations in Western Europe, you're seeing, you know, essentially you get a 20 to 30% discount coupon if you're going into the United Kingdom, for example, because of Brexit and where the pound is on scale. You know, the euro also being very weak against the dollar means all your activities, your hotels, your meals, your activities are all much cheaper than they have been in previous years. It's almost a perfect storm to, for example, travel into Europe this year, where the price points probably are going to be at what I would probably consider to be decade lows.
Would you consider this safe to fly to those places? You mentioned the terrorism jitters. Is it safe?
Yeah, I'm flying there a couple times, so I absolutely believe it's safe. I just think you have to keep mindful of where you are and where things are. Just generally, I think that's just something, unfortunately, that travelers are going to have to do, and even people that just live in locations. It's always good to be aware, and I think, again, staying out of bad situations is always a good thing.
You mentioned the Cuba decline, not strong growth there as people thought with the air flights into Cuba. What do you think's behind that, Rick?
Well, a couple things. I think initially what happened is you had a number of slots open up. It's very rare that you have a brand new city opening up where there's, you know, you can actually have traffic to it. I think a lot of the airlines went in and said, I don't want the other airline to have this route, so they were reserving those slots. They put in a lot of capacity initially. It's still tough to fly into Cuba. You have to sort of be in 12 categories. One of them isn't laying on the beach anytime you want. And the infrastructure there with internet and currency is difficult, especially for kids traveling who need Snapchat, you know, every instant of the day. So I think what you're seeing is that initial rush occur, and now airlines are either, you know, taking smaller aircrafts and putting them in there or even removing that. I think the other thing that happened too is initially there wasn't enough hotel space, and that drove up hotel prices pretty dramatically. So a lot of people just put off their trips, and now it's actually cheaper to fly there and to go and visit. So I think, again, they overcooked it a bit.
Rick, happy travels.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
See. Rick Senior is the founder and CEO of FairCompare.com, based out of Dallas. You can follow him on Twitter at Rick Senior and at FairCompare.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:53 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The Dow futures are pointing up about 25 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures look up as well as we move toward the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time. Gold is trading lower. Silver is trading higher. And crude oil at $48 a barrel, up about a half a percent. One other note about the travel ban. We don't really want to call it a ban, but the regulations that keep you from having those electronic devices on planes. One of the airlines, Royal Jordanian Airline, posted this on Twitter yesterday. Suggestions, 12 things, suggestions to do on a 12-hour flight without a laptop or a tablet. Not sure a lot of these are helpful. I'll read a couple of them. One of them, read a book. Okay, that's a good one. Two, meditate. 12 hours of meditation. I don't know if that's kind of realistic. The other, pretend you have an imaginary friend with you, or pretend the table is a keyboard. These are real things. Analyze the meaning of life. And then the last one, think of reasons why you don't have a laptop or tablet with you. Again, that's from Royal Jordanian Airlines. Not sure if that was tongue-in-cheek or not. 12 things that you can do on a 12-hour flight without a laptop or some other device with you that you now have to check. Now, the Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Friday, March the 24th, 2017. Some major business and economic reports out today include the Commerce Department's release of the February report on durable goods. The Labor Department will report on state unemployment rates for February. House Republican leaders are trying to regroup and vote again today on the health care plan. Could come anytime between 9 o'clock Chicago time and 4 o'clock Chicago time. New York Times reports the Trump administration is going to make it harder for millions of visitors to enter the U.S. by demanding new security checks before giving visas to tourists, business travelers, and relatives of Americans. That announcement likely coming today. Also, senior U.S. officials say the State Department will recommend final approval of the Keystone XL pipeline, clearing the way for that finally to get underway. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, March the 24th, 2017. Couple of other notes as we end the broadcast today. Twitter is considering whether or not to build a premium version of its popular TweetDeck interface aimed at professionals. The company says it's raising that possibility because it's not really been successful with advertising. This is the first time they've really talked about a possible subscription fee for the service. According to those who've seen the test, the version would include more powerful tools to especially help marketers, journalists, professionals, and others in the community that use Twitter from a professional standpoint. Also today, a new report out in the UK says a third of existing British jobs are at risk of being taken over by robots or artificial intelligence within 15 years. That's by 2030, 30% of existing roles. Some of the biggest jobs that could be in jeopardy, jobs in the water, sewage and waste management industry, also transportation and storage are right up there, the jobs threatened by robotics within the next 15 years.